Alertly will play it ahead, and Montreal is going to put Caulfield to the bench. Big line trading and heading off. Here's Mangiapane coming down the middle. He scores! Andrew Mangiapane scores from the high slot, coming into the zone. He just beat Jakub Dobesh with 3:37 to go in the third. It's 3-2 Washington.
And that stood as the game winner, John Walton, on the call on our sister station, home of the Caps, 106.7 The Fan. 3:37 left in the third period the other night. A game in which they entered the third trailing 2-1 with Montreal threatening to even up this series. But after that, a couple of empty netters, and the Caps are back home tomorrow night with a chance to put the Canadiens away in five with a 3-1 series lead. Joining us right now is my friend Ben Raby. Ben covers hockey for the Hockey News, for SiriusXM, was many, many years part of the Caps radio broadcast as well. I love talking hockey with Ben because he knows a lot more about hockey than I do. So I want to start with the hit by Tom Wilson the other night, because their goalie, Jakub Dobesh, essentially said, I guess, quote, the rules don't apply for everyone in this league, close quote, implying that that should have been penalized. That led to the game tying goal earlier in the third period when the Caps were down 2-1. So, should it have been penalized or not?
I like the hit. I like that type of game, Kevin, and you're right. It led directly to the game tying goal. It changed the momentum of the entire game and the remainder of the third period. The hit itself, I was okay with. I will say, objectively speaking, Kevin, there was a lot that was called in the game earlier on the night. Again, this was in the third period. There were some ticky-tack calls made earlier, okay, against both teams. So you could make the case, if you are whistling the infractions that were called in periods one and two, you could make an argument that this could have been called as well. I can see that. That being said, I personally feel, and again, this is on both sides, Kevin, Montreal and Washington, there were a lot of things that were called early on the night that really you can raise your hands and say, what were those called for?
So a lot of the interference calls, right?
Yeah, interference, a slash on John Carlson. I mean, there were multiple examples, again, on both sides. And it started very early on. The opening couple of minutes of the game, there was a penalty on Caps defenseman Alexander Alexeyev. And again, I keep saying, I point to this is on both sides. Capitals had a 5-on-3 power play opportunity in the second period. Montreal had a very valid case. It should have still been 5-on-5. There were ticky-tack calls on both sides. But if that's the way the game was being called, you could then make the argument that Tom Wilson crossed the line in the third period. I don't personally feel that way. I side on the fact that very few of these should have been called anyways. And the hit that Tom Wilson delivered, I was okay with. That's a thunderous hit.
What would have made the hit illegal? Because it was debatable as to whether or not there was contact with the head, I thought. But although the player himself looked a bit wobbly heading off the ice and did not come back into the game.
You can make the case for a charge. You can make the case for a charge. I would not necessarily do that, but that's the infraction that would be called. It would have been a two-minute minor. But again, it's certainly the nature of the hit and the fact that seconds later, down at the other end of the ice, again, this is in the neutral zone, but down in the offensive zone, Brendan Nyheim scores the goal. Certainly it garnered plenty of attention given what happened seconds after. Had play just continued, had it been whistled seconds later and offside, etc., who knows if it would be such a big conversation. But obviously the result seconds later lends itself to opening the debate.
Is that a play? I'm ignorant to this, so if this is obviously being looked at right now, I apologize for not knowing it, although I tried to find it before the show started. But is this a play that the league reviews after the fact and can fine him?
Could. I don't think there's necessarily that taking place. The league always likes to say, Kevin, they review everything. Everything gets looked at after the fact, so I'm sure it was, whether it was advertised or not. That's sort of a company line by the NHL. They look at everything, and certainly number 43 has a reputation, has a track record. I'm sure it was looked at. I'm sure Montreal, the Canadiens, would have knocked on the door of the league office as well, you know, encouraging them, hey, well, take a look at that play. But haven't heard anything regarding any supplemental discipline or a fine, you know, which isn't to say a fine isn't coming, but haven't necessarily heard anything. And then there won't be a suspension. I mean, it's not a suspendable play. That's not what it was.
At Ben Raby 31 on X on Twitter. So if someone had missed all four of the games played so far, how would you summarize the series other than saying the Caps are up 3-1?
I would summarize it in part by saying the Canadians have hung around thanks in part to the better special teams play. The Canadians have 5 power play goals compared to the Capitals with just 1. Conversely, at 5-on-5, even strength, especially the other night in Game 4, the Capitals have been the much superior team at even strength, where, again, obviously the majority of the game is spent. But you could credit the Montreal Canadiens. They've been able to hang around. They've scored some timely goals. Their Game 3 win on Friday night, when there was so much energy at the Bell Center in Montreal, they took advantage of their special teams opportunities, and the Capitals less so. And I, again, point to the fact that on Sunday night in Game 4, Capitals had this golden opportunity in the second period, trailing 2-1. Yeah. They had north of a minute of a 2-man advantage, and they could not convert. And I will say, credit to the Capitals, that despite that, they were able to regroup and come out in the third period and eventually rally and take the lead, and they went on to win the game. But part of the storyline in this series so far has been the Capitals' much, much stronger play at 5-on-5, Capitals hanging around on special teams. And I say that to say this, Kevin, the Capitals with only 1 power play goal through 4 games. That's due to change at some point. You know, whether that's Game 5, whether that's moving forward later in the playoffs, it's a power play unit which, you know, should be clicking at better than 10%. They're 1-for-10 so far on the man advantage, the Capitals.
Yeah. So why are they 1-for-10?
Just having a tough time finding the back of the net. They've had sustained pressure. They've had zone time, et cetera. I can't tell you exactly why it's not going in. But there are indications, you know, it's not as if, you know, they're running around the whole power play. They've had sustained zone time. They've been in control. They have the personnel. And should mention as well, this doesn't impact the power play, but should mention, they could potentially be getting a boost as well, even more so at 5-on-5, which I'm referring to, with the potential addition or return, I should say, of Alexei Protas, 30-goal scorer in the regular season. You know, his return, it's been inching closer. From all indications, seems he could be back for Game 5 as well. So that's another encouraging sign there.
Has Montreal missed their starting goaltender, who I thought was outstanding, you know, for the first 2.5 games, Montembeau?
Yeah. No, Jakub Dobish is a good goaltender as well. You know, came on late in the regular season, and I thought did a great job when he came on in relief in Game 3, at least giving the Canadians the opportunity to rally for that win. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's that much of a drop-off. I will say the other angle from a cap side of things, is you did have the return in Game 4, perhaps surprisingly, of Logan Thompson. We didn't necessarily know that. Didn't look good the way he left Game 3. And I'll say from a big picture standpoint here, Kevin, you have to go back years ago, the last time the Capitals really had an advantage in series in the goaltending head-to-head. You really have to go back to the Braden Holtby years. You've got to go back to either 2019 against Carolina or 2020, the bubble series against the New York Islanders. Since then, been a little bit of a revolving door in these parts with starting goaltenders, Samsonov and Vitek Vanacek, et cetera, names from the past. They have not had a goaltending edge in a postseason series in quite some time. And even if Montembeau was healthy and still in this series, the way Logan Thompson has showed himself has been outstanding. He's been terrific. Keep in mind, missed the end of the regular season with a concussion, came back for Game 1. He has been outstanding. And certainly his return in Game 4 shouldn't be overlooked either.
He really has been. I was going to ask you real quickly about the Caulfield. And by the way, he's been an impressive player in this series for Montreal. Whether or not that particular power play goal that gave Montreal a 2-1 lead in the second period, if that was one of those bad goals allowed.
You can make the case. It's a pretty lethal shot Caulfield has as well. And that was a power play goal. And again, both Montreal goals on Sunday night in Game 4 were on the man advantage. But should mention as well, one of the storylines and one of the angles for Montreal's side of things is they have a terrific number one line. They've been very good at even strength, that trio of Caulfield, Nick Suzuki, and Yaroslav Slavkovsky. And tomorrow night, with the Capitals coming back home, the advantage of the last change, they had their hands full in Montreal with that trio. Now, the Canadians, you know, when you're the home team, you have the advantage of putting your players out second.
Right.
You see what the visiting team puts out. They were matching that line, the Canadians were, as much as possible, against Ovechkin in the number one line. The series shifts back to D.C. It will allow the Capitals and Spencer Carberry, anytime the number one line for the Canadians goes out, he's going to put Nick Dowd and Radish and Duhaime, the fourth line for the Capitals, the quote-unquote shutdown line. He'll have that advantage because that trio really gives the Capitals a handful. And not to downplay the offensive weapons and capabilities the Canadians have, but it really starts with those three. They're so good. They have been great in this series. And at least from a Caps perspective, you'll have the opportunity to at least put yourself in better position to contain them with the advantage of the last change here in Game 5.
Look, we've all been around here long enough to know it's never over until it's over with the Caps in the postseason. But 3-1 coming back home, they'll have two home games of the final three if they need them. Hopefully they won't. Let's just assume for a moment that they do advance. What's the matchup look like against Carolina in the second round? Because it looks like Carolina, with a 3-1 series lead against New Jersey, will advance as well.
That's a tough one. It's a tough one. It's a real intriguing one. Carolina gave the Capitals a tough time. They played twice late in the season, just in April, just in the past couple of weeks. Carolina had a blowout win in their place in Raleigh, and then they met the following week here in D.C. The Capitals had to rally in the third period to force overtime, eventually won the game in a shootout. It's a pesky Carolina team that certainly wouldn't be intimidated by any means of the Capitals. They've matched up very well against them. And it's a team, again, we're looking ahead now of this potential series, but it's a team in Carolina. Their mantra is they shoot everything. They lead the league in shots on goal. They'll shoot from anywhere. That's what they do. They're a high-volume shot team. Capitals know this, of course, but it could be a busy series for Logan Thompson. We'll put it that way. They're a very aggressive team once they gain the blue line, Carolina.
Overall, Ben, in this postseason, I mean, the West has had, you know, I think every series is 2-2, although I guess after last night, Dallas is up 3-2. Yep. Who's been super impressive so far here in the first round?
I have to think about that for a minute. I'm impressed that the St. Louis Blues have earned back-to-back blowout wins over top-seeded Winnipeg out West.
Right.
In both games, Connor Hellebuyck, arguably the best goalie in the league, had to be pulled. I think St. Louis and what they've been able to do to get themselves back in the series is impressive. And even if Winnipeg, again, the top seed out West, even if they move on to face the winner of Colorado, Dallas, I do wonder if, you know, a piece of them has, you know, taken a hit here as far as what the Blues have been able to do to them. So the Blues' ability to claw their way back in the series has impressed. And I'll say on the Eastern side of things, you know, there's always drama, okay, surrounding the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, to make a comparison, they're sort of the Dallas Cowboys, right? They're the team with a long history, but seemingly can't get over the hump in the postseason. They take up a lot of oxygen. And I will say they've had this first-round series against Ottawa, the Battle of Ontario, and it's been relatively quiet and businesslike for Toronto. And as they seek an elusive, deep postseason run, which, again, has eluded them for decades, I do wonder if for that core, that's maybe a good thing. They could win that series as soon as tonight, Game 5 back in Toronto. You know, looking ahead, if they are, again, to have that elusive deep postseason run, this relatively quiet, business-like first-round series maybe will do them some good.
All right, last one, because I know you're very familiar with the Bell Center and with Montreal and their fan base. I mean, just watching it on TV the other night, and I actually flipped back and forth to get the TBS and the Monumental, because Monumental actually, I think, pipes in the crowd noise a little bit better than TBS did. But I wanted that was just watching on TV Friday night and for moments during the game on Sunday night. Is that the best home environment in hockey?
I think so. I mean, I'm biased maybe, or recency biased. You know, obviously we saw what they showed over the weekend and going back to last Friday, but it's really special. And one of the things, and again, having grown up there, there's bias there too. But Kevin, the thing about going to a game in Montreal is that, you know, and this is growing now, even with more females playing hockey on the regular, but every male in the building, okay, has played the game at some level, you know, right. Whether it's, and everything, people there know the game and they know when to get involved and when to get excited for subtle plays, for little things. And then you combine that with the energy before the game, the presentation before the game, you know, the all the pregame pomp and circumstance that surrounds it in Montreal. There's a lot of things that go into making it a very special atmosphere. And especially at this time of year, which it's been a while in Montreal, they reached the cup final in the COVID year when attendance was very limited, right, especially in Canada. They've waited 8 years, right, to have a sold out building for a playoff game. There's a lot of pent up energy, I think, leading up to Friday night, especially. And you combine that again with the passion, with the knowledge of the fan base. It's a lot of things that go into making it a very, very special building, special place to watch a game.
I had a friend of mine reach out to me over the weekend and say, Montreal for a playoff game should be on your bucket list. It's as good as anything that he's been to, and he's been to a bunch of sporting events in a lot of different places, but he said it was insane on Friday night. Thanks for doing this. Hope you're well.
Yeah, likewise, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Ben Raby, everybody, at BenRaby31 on X and on Twitter. Next, Chris Cooley's film breakdown of Josh Connerly Jr. Right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Don't forget, you can stream us now live on our 980, Team 980 YouTube page.